The reading this morning is taken from the book of Daniel. You'll find the reading on page 886. So if you want to be locating that, page 886. We're going to be reading from chapter 3. And we're going to start the reading at verse 13 and read through to verse 20. Furious with rage, Nebuchadnezzar summoned Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So these men were brought before the king. And Nebuchadnezzar said to them, "Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the image of gold I have set up? Now, when you hear the sound of the horn, the flute, the zither, the lyre, the harp, the pipes, and all kinds of music, if you are ready to fall down and worship the image I made, very good. But if you do not worship it, you will be thrown immediately into a blazing furnace. Then what God will be able to rescue you from my hand?" Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to the king, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to save us from it, and he will rescue us from your hand, O king. But even if he does not, we want you to know, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you have set up." Then Nebuchadnezzar was furious with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and his attitude towards them changed. He ordered the furnace to be heated 7 times hotter than usual and commanded some of the strongest soldiers in his army to tie up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and throw them into the blazing furnace. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Thank you, Peter. So that was just part of a story that I'm guessing most of us will know. But let me tell you the story so far as we work our way through the book of Daniel, or the middle part of the book of Daniel, in 4 weeks. The story begins with the first attack from Babylon against Judah, when some of the Jewish elites were carried away into exile. And among them were Daniel, also known by his Babylonian name Belteshazzar, and his 3 friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. The first chapter of the book tells the story of how they were under pressure to give up things that were vital to them in their Jewish identity. But they stood firm and were vindicated. Last week we had a look at chapter 2, in which Daniel was able to interpret King Nebuchadnezzar's dream. And because of that, he was given honour and status in the Babylonian court. And we're picking up 4 stories from chapters 2 to 7 to look at. And it's a section of the book of Daniel with a beautifully clever shape that I'm describing like a U. And chapters 2 and 7 match each other. They're both about dreams and the interpretation of those dreams. Chapters 3 and 6 match each other. They're both about that pressure to give up true worship of God, and the fact that Daniel and his friends resisted the pressure and were vindicated. And then at the bottom of the U, chapters 4 and 5 show just how low human beings can sink. So appropriately, that's at the bottom, and that's where we'll get to next week. But today in chapter 3, we have got a section from a long and rather repetitive chapter. And it's quite interesting, if you read the whole thing, you get very fed up of reading about the horn, the lyre, the pipe, the zither, and all the rest of the other instruments, and the satraps, prefects, governors, advisors, treasurers, da-di-da-di-da. Why is it done like that? Well, it just emphasizes how pompous it all is, I think. It's as though the writer is playing it for laughs. Saying, look at these people, they think they're so important, don't they? But compared to God, and nothing much. So in today's section, what we have is the crucial moments when it becomes clear that Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego are not going to bow down to this golden statue that Nebuchadnezzar set up. Nebuchadnezzar knows this now, and so he's forced to carry out his threat of throwing them into a blazing furnace. But I want to focus in on their answer to the king, which is striking in its brevity. It's verses 16 to 18, and you'll see it there on page 886 if you've got a Bible open. "We don't need to defend ourselves, Your Majesty. We trust that our God will rescue us, even if we're thrown into the blazing furnace. But actually, Your Majesty, it makes no difference. Even if He doesn't save us, we're not going to bow down and worship Your statue." And that's it. That's all I've got to say. There is a time to keep silence and a time to speak, as Ecclesiastes tells us. And we need wisdom to know when to do which and courage to neglect neither. Often it's the time to speak, and many times we don't speak up. Maybe because we're ashamed or afraid or really not sure in our faith. But occasionally, as now with these three, it's actions that speak louder than words. Jesus, in his ministry, which was largely about speaking, was always teaching the crowds, encouraging his disciples, rebuking his opponents. But when he came to his trial and his death, he was far more often silent. He said very little when on trial before Caiaphas, and not a word to King Herod. His words from the cross were few and brief. His final answer was given, like Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego, in faithfulness, love and suffering. And likewise with these three, they calmly tell the king that our God whom we serve is able to deliver us. Seems impossible, doesn't it? How could anyone survive being thrown into a furnace? But nothing is impossible with God. He gave Sarah a son in her old age. He rescued Moses and the people of Israel as they were hemmed in by the Red Sea, with Pharaoh's army bearing down on them. Jeremiah prayed, "Ah, sovereign Lord, you have made the heavens and the earth by your great power. Nothing is impossible for you." When Jesus told his disciples that it is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven, the disciples cried out, "Well, who's going to be saved then?" And Jesus replied, "With man this is impossible, but with God all things are possible." So, these three have faith that God can do something even seemingly impossible. But notice what they also say. Our God is able to save us, but even if he doesn't, we won't bow down and worship your statue. That's verse 18. And this shows the same respect for God's wisdom that Daniel had. In chapter 2, when Nebuchadnezzar asked Daniel, "Can you interpret my dream?" Daniel said, "No, I can't. Only God can." And so here, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego make it clear that it's not for them to decide whether they should survive or be killed in the fire. That is for God, in his wisdom, to decide. Now, of course, if you've read ahead in the story, or if you know it already, you will know, and spoiler alert in case you don't, they do survive the fire. Their faith is vindicated and they are honoured by the king, just as Daniel will be in the parallel chapter, chapter 6. And we won't be reading that chapter in this series. We're going to let this story do duty for both. And think now about what it teaches us. It's a different attitude to that of the Maccabees or the Zealots. Who were they? Well, the Maccabees came a couple of centuries later after the time of the events that we're thinking about today, and they led a successful revolution against the Seleucid Empire that was currently ruling Israel. And the later chapters of Daniel seem to allude to events of this time, but that's outside the scope of our series now. I'm not going to get into that today. And the Zealots? Well, they were a group opposed to Roman occupation in Jesus' day. And we know that Jesus called one of the Zealots to be his disciple and taught him the way of peace, not armed conflict. So although the armed resistance showed by these groups has a fair amount of honour and status amongst Israel, then and now, it's not the mainstream biblical approach to enemies, to enemy empires. The people of Israel at this time were grappling with the shock of exile. How could God allow his chosen people to be taken away from the land he promised them? This just does not compute. So what should they do? Should they fight back, try and reclaim the land, defend it at all costs? Or should they trust that God in his wisdom had allowed this disaster to happen in order that his people might learn a hard lesson? Now, at the time that this was going on, most people were with the Maccabees. They would have said, we've got to fight. We must hang on to what is ours. And it was only a few, the prophets, like Jeremiah, who said, no, we must let this happen. This is God's will for us at this time. And it was those minority voices who actually shaped the stories of Israel that we read in our Bible today, the histories of the kings. And they pointed out the idolatry and the greed and the disregard for the law of Moses and said, this is why it happened. We wandered far from God's ways. He kept warning us, we wouldn't listen. And so the exile took place. So if we look at the shape of these chapters of Daniel that we're studying, this U shape that I've described, we can see that right now we're on the downward path. Disobedience to God's law has caused arrogant kings to demand worship, because Israel as a whole has not worshipped the Lord their God with all their heart, soul, mind, and strength. And only a tiny few are here still doing their best to cling on to that proper worship. Only four of them. That's it. Next week, we will see how bad things can really become. And then the week after that, we will see Daniel's vision of the future and the hope that God holds out for us all. Amen.